everybody. Welcome. Thanks very much for joining us. This is Cushman & Wakefield's Team Around the Table discussion. Today, I'm very pleased to be introducing a topic called hybrid working from transition to transformation. My name is Steven Zatta, and I am the global lead for Total Workplace's research and innovation practice. I'm joined by two colleagues who I'll allow to introduce themselves in just a moment here, and that's Kim Young from APAC and also Herta Stelpstra from Europe. So thanks both for joining the conversation today. It's great to have both of you participating in this, given your expertise in the area. And then also, I think it's really exciting to have a group of us talking across the globe here. So we've got three different regions, three different time zones getting together to talk about kind of the latest thinking on what's going on in the hybrid working world. Before we dive in, I'm really curious, even though we've worked together for a number of years, I've never really talked to you both about how you got started in this industry that we, you know, we're fortunate enough to find ourselves working in. You know, for myself, I started off as a researcher in school. I thought I was going to go into academia or actually work for the U.S. State Department in diplomacy. So I studied a lot of research and analytics and writing and things of that nature, and then found myself really lucky to be recruited by an organization that wanted to start researching the relationship between workplace and human beings. And it sounded so fascinating that I just took the job. And here we are, many years later, I'm still doing it and so happy that I found my way into this place. So that's a little bit about how I got here. I'd love to know from each of you how you got here. Kim, is it okay if we start with you to find out how you got started in this space?
Yes, Stephen. So it has been around 8 years now, so since I started in this industry. But previous to that, I actually have an organizational psychology background. So my roots actually started in HR consulting, where I was really doing a lot more engagement, change management. I was looking for a change, and through some chance encountering, got introduced to the world of workplace strategy, and I've never looked back.
Thank you, Kim, very much for that background. And just so that folks who are viewing us today, you're based in Singapore, is that right?
That is correct. I'm based in Singapore.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Herta?
Yeah. What a fun question. I have an anthropology background, so I'm a bit of an ugly duckling in the real estate industry. I joined the real estate industry about 10 years ago by chance. I had a friend working in the real estate industry, and she invited me over. And I was based in Amsterdam in the transaction side of the business. And I think within a couple of months, someone from the consultancy part reached out to me and said, hey, as an anthropologist, aren't you, you know, more suitable for a consultant role? And I hadn't really thought of it before that, but it makes total sense because as an anthropologist, I'm constantly looking at what culture does, how culture is formed in the built environment, how people interact within it. I think it's been the perfect match ever since.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And you're based in the Netherlands, right? In our Helix office.
Yeah. So I'm based out of the Netherlands, our Helix Living Lab office, which I'm sure will come up today.
Excellent. Well, thank you so very much for sharing a little bit about your backgrounds. You know, one of the things I took note of, and I think this is an interesting theme for today's conversation, is that all three of us come into the workplace real estate space from backgrounds that you might not expect right off the top, right? So we all came at this from different perspectives, different backgrounds, different educational programs. And I think that's what's so exciting about the real estate and workplace terrain these days, and that it does bring together various disciplines, ways of thinking, and techniques that really are coming together in new, exciting, dynamic ways to help us think about our industry and what's going on with the relationship between the way people work, technology, physical space, all of those things when it comes to human experience, productivity, well-being and health, things of that nature. You know, what we're talking about today really is something I think there is a tremendous amount of dialogue about, but not a lot of consensus yet, right? There's not a lot of proven conventional wisdom at the moment. So lots of discussion, lots of ideas, but people are really still trying to figure a lot of things out in this space. And so I kind of want to start off with a broad question today, and that is, when we think about hybrid work and how it's performing today, I'd really love to know your views on how you feel hybrid work is going, specifically in your regions, but globally for everybody as well. You know, and from my perspective, and by way of introduction, one of the key things I do is a lot of research on human experience. We have a diagnostic product that we use at Cushman & Wakefield called Experience per Square Foot. And essentially what that is it's a diagnostic tool and a survey that pulls in all types of very specific information about how people are feeling about their work experience, their workplace, their hybrid work. And what we're seeing in that data is that people that really fall into that core, what we call the hybrid bucket, who are working partially at home or third places, and then partially in the office, they're having a tough time right now. Their experience is actually not quite as good as those who are coming into the office more regularly or coming in, you know, a lot less regularly. It's that middle piece that are struggling. I'd love to find out, how does that match up with what you all are seeing with your clients and your research and studies?
I think, you know, when it comes to hybrid work, what I find very interesting is that it feels like we've been kind of in a tug of war in the last couple of years, right? Because pre-hybrid working, pre-COVID, it would be economic sentiment, right? Are we on the side of the talent? Are we giving an amazing workplace? Or are we on the side of organization and cost cutting? And it feels like hybrid working is like in the middle of that tug of war between leadership and between talent. Mm. And I think that we've proven in COVID that we can definitely work from home, work from different places, work from third places. And that is not necessarily the issue. But now coming back into the office, what's happened is that there are so many dynamics in place. It's not anymore everybody's outside of the office, right? But everybody has different preferences and everybody works in a different way. And how can we make that a success? And that's a real struggle for a lot of the companies that we work with. And there's not one clear answer, right? I mean, what works for one company won't necessarily work for the other company. And what works for one individual doesn't necessarily work for the other. So we need to be we need to be attentive of the different individual preferences, but also of the organizational benefit of the office and coming into the office and collaboration and et cetera.
On top of that, what we've seen in Asia specifically that is that hybrid working is really not a one-size-fits-all solution. Neither is it really a one-time strategy that will stand the test of time. So the best programs that we've seen are the ones that evolve and are the ones that continuously improve with the help of three things. So the first is really intentionality. So how intentional are our clients really thinking and designing this program, which is via the help of the second thing, which is data. And that's something that we're going to be talking a lot more throughout this entire video session. And then last but not least, how do we then use change management to really help us to get from point A to point B, therefore, you know, really helping with a more sustainable transformation overall.
Thank you both very much. Nerda, you were talking about all the different things that take place in the workplace and how dynamic it is. And Kim talking about kind of the need for intentionality, looking at the data to inform decision making and things of that nature. The fascinating thing that I'm seeing in our data is that the purpose of the office in the minds of both senior executives and employees is very clear. Like, there's really not a debate about the purpose of the office. It comes down to connection between people, right? It's all about concepts like socialization, relationships, collaboration, those types of things. And that makes sense, right? Obviously, if you have an entity that is designed to bring people together for the purpose of work, that concept of interaction amongst people is, of course, going to be kind of the key purpose. But this is the thing that really surprises me and also kind of keeps me up at night when I think about the nature of how things are moving forward. People today, when you ask them how they spend their time, 75% of that time is spent on heads down work, whether that's you know, working by yourself on something or being in a virtual meeting where like you're talking to someone, you know, over Zoom or video conference, where you don't actually need to be physically co-located to do that work. And people, when they come into the office, they're spending most of their time doing that. And so one of the questions we have is the way people are approaching how they think about work, how they think about using technology, how they think about when and why they come into the office, is that keeping pace with what's happening, right? So if we know the purpose is all about collaboration and connection, yet people are still coming into the office and using that valuable time in the office to do really what is individual work, what's happening there? Why are we seeing that kind of gap between purpose on the one hand and what's really taking place on the other?
I think that's a really good question, Stephen. And I think one thing that we're seeing, especially in the APAC, is that more and more we need to collaborate with HR. So no longer can we only think about the physical elements of the office, but to your point, it's also about the work processes as well. So therefore, some of the clients that, you know, that has gotten it are the ones where they're actively bringing HR people, learning development people, plus CRE all together to create a new team that is really looking into the long-term future around how can we really evolve work processes? How can we really start to really adopt future ways of working?
A really big part of what we see in the office is a translation of people's actual jobs, right? We tend to think that we're very collaborative face-to-face. But when we look at the tasks that we do, a lot of our tasks are still quite individual. But I think also the term individual has become more broad, because individual doesn't necessarily mean you are solo tasking. It means that you might be sending emails, or you're working on a document while someone from a different office is working on the document at the same time. It's still collaborating, but in a very different way. You probably will see that as individual work. And I think it's really interesting what happens when you encourage people also to do different types of behaviors when they do come into the office, right? Because a lot of what is perceived as individual work, what kind of benefit can come from that if we see it as collaborative work? If we are in the office and we're working on a document, focused on it, but then having a colleague come in and help and broaden it and make us more, we see that it's more, it leads to more innovation from that perspective as well, right? We think outside the box, we get triggered. And I think there's still like a really big value of being in the office and encouraging people to seek up that interaction, seek the collaboration, even for those more individually focused tasks. Not to be said that, of course, you have individual tasks during a week, and there's a bit of change management needed there to encourage people to choose the right place for the right set of tasks for the day.
Thanks very much. Those are really fascinating comments. And I think you know, if we think about the concept of the evolving, and when you think about how work is taking place in the modern world with the technology that we've got, that leads me to a really interesting topic that I think is really at the cutting edge of how we think about workplace and measuring workplace effectiveness and what's going on with people. And that gets at this idea of social capital. Now, social capital might be a term that not everybody's familiar with. And so, you know, my way of thinking about it is that social capital really comes down to the network of relationships between people, right? And how those relationship networks enable groups of people to be successful. So when we think about people who are part of an organization, part of a company, their networks they have are really critical in terms of driving both individual success and collaborative success. And so what I was curious to really understand from you is the way that how we think about the idea of social capital and the success of workplace, how has that changed recently? And Herta, I really love to hear your views on that point.
Yeah. Like I said at the beginning, right, it feels like a tug of war, this hybrid working. And I think that social capital plays right into that. We've previously always focused on human capital, especially as workplace strategists. A lot of our work has been aimed at what does the individual perceive of his job, of the work environment? How can we make sure that the individual is as productive as possible? I truly believe that we're at a turning point. And we're now seeing more and more clients asking the question, how can I make a work environment that supports my business? So it's really real estate as a supporter of their organizational strategy. And how can you enable your real estate to really work for you as an organization? One of the ways that we've started measuring that is an organizational network analysis. And in our living lab in Utrecht, which is called Helix, we've done an organizational network analysis, and what it does, it looks at your metadata. So in our case, it looks at all the email communication, the chats, the meetings, online meetings, etc., and who's collaborating with who, what's the intensity, how many links are in between people. So we look at the different networks within the organization. And what we found is that when we consolidated into our office, our networks actually increased in strength. So these different groups of people in our organization were now able to find each other, which I think just speaks to this new kind of workplace 2.0, where we're no longer talking about, hey, how can I support the individual, but how can I support the organization in connecting these people and enabling them to do their best work together. Another thing that people are really concerned about is culture and culture building in the built environment. And I think that there's an element of truth there, right? Because if you look at culture and how culture is built, it's built through values. So you have certain values that you want to translate. And those are embedded in your narrative and how you talk, in your policies through HR, but also in your built environment, right? If you have a lot of transparency in your built environment, that also shows that you have a transparent culture. It doesn't translate one-to-one. Of course, you always have people in the environment that will influence that. But you can definitely nudge your environment to change your culture or to have people align with your cultural values. One example of this is a client we worked with very recently, actually, a logistics company working with very diverse clients, but also a very diverse employee set, where one of the aims really was for the environment to connect people, because their connection was one of their main values in the organization. And by doing so, what we did is we created a central place where people would come together that was open. And that was a big thing for them, because it has to do a lot with security, right? Where can people come and where can people not come? But we created a very open lobby where you would enter and where you can work together, where you can meet with clients, where you as an employee can grab a healthy snack. And all of those buzzwords actually around connecting, but also around healthy, were all values from their culture that they wanted to be translated, wanted to have translated in space.
That's really exciting. And I think this is truly a tremendous innovation in our space of measurement and the ability to look at the connection between place and what actually happens in a measurable way when it comes to improving performance. And that leads me to a question about the way that we have collected and looked at information in the past and what we can do going forward. And I think organizational network analysis is one, you know, key new area that we can be looking at. But that leads me to think a little bit about what we've done for a long time, right? And that is things like interviews and focus groups and surveys. And so, you know, I have this view that those things are still really effective and helpful. So I'd call them kind of necessary, but not sufficient. They don't really do an effective enough job to really help us understand all of the things we need to know about the workplace environment, the nature of work, whether that's happening in an office, whether that's happening, you know, in a coffee shop, or whether that's happening at someone's house. Really being able to understand this and measure this requires new ways of looking at things.
Yeah, I think on top of what Herta has mentioned, we spoke about surveys, focus groups, and I think that's where you can really extract culture information around how do you want to keep the culture alive within the organization. And, you know, another word for culture is really how do you design the experience, right? What is the workplace experience that we want to cultivate within not just the physical environment, but also digitally as we, you know, collaborate across globes and connecting employees from different regions as well. We recently completed a project with another client where on top of the traditional methods, we actually looked into their communication systems as well. So we did this via Microsoft Viva Insights, and we were able to collect actually quantitative data via hours around how people are communicating with each other, how long are they doing it, and what are some other, you know, communication systems that we don't traditionally see, such as instant messaging, etc. With that, what we were able to do was to holistically map out the subjective qualitative experience that you just spoke about with actually what are we seeing behaviorally, what are the actual patterns. Mm-hmm. And that allowed us to be a little bit more intentional, as we talked about earlier, in terms of thinking not just about workplace design, but also workplace planning. So how do we want to make sure that we want to put teams who should be collaborating closer together, nearer to each other within the office areas? So that gave us a little bit more data to understand how the future workplace is going to evolve. And last but not least, where we do see weaker links. So for example, if the HR team is supposed to be the center of influence, but they are actually not very visible within the organization, how can we leverage change management to really help these teams to stand up and to become a little bit more influential over time?
That's fascinating. And I have to imagine that that's a different type of conversation you're having with your client than you've had in the past, and probably something they're not necessarily used to talking to kind of their workplace and real estate advisors about, in terms of being able to pull those different types of information pieces together in that type of a dialogue. So I imagine that must have been entirely different and really elevated conversation with the client.
Absolutely. To your analogy, for me, the way I think about it is, if we ask people, do you think that you have a really healthy sleep patterns? Most people would say, yeah, I have a pretty decent one. But once you start wearing those fancy watch or ring devices and you start to track your sleep patterns, you realize that actually there's a lot more things that you could do. So this is exactly where, using other ways or methods to bring into our entire workplace solutioning really starts to open more opportunities and possibilities around how we can really continuously evolve and improve our programs.
Neherda, has your experience been similar in terms of kind of looking beyond the traditional kind of measure capture?
It all starts with how we frame our projects, right? Yeah. I think it's really important at the beginning of a project to really understand that everything that we're doing is talking about workplace transformation. Everything that we do is, in essence, designing change for our clients, right? And therefore, at the beginning, just being very clear on what needs to be the end goal, and then defining what those assumptions are leading to that end goal, that opens up an arena of data points, right? Because everything that you want to design is going to be an assumption, right? We know that certain spaces will increase collaboration, but will that be for this client as well? So just by the mere fact of at the beginning, taking the time to really understand the question, designing the change, then you get to a place where you can start formulating KPIs and formulating the different data sets that you want to touch upon. And then what we see happening is that surveys, yes, of course, are going to be a part of that. They will always be a part of that because it's a really good way to show employee sentiment. But on top of that, it's really interesting to look at HR data sets, right? Because real estate and then how people interact within real estate isn't just a real estate item. It's talking about HR. It's talking about IT. So pulling in data around retention, around sick leave, but also around profitability of an organization, organizational network analysis, looking at the way people communicate. And that's all hard data. And then in the diagnosis phase of when we are working with clients, I think one of the powerful tools that we've started using is ethnographic research. So as an anthropologist, I of course can't say anything else. But for me, it's nothing is more powerful than just being a part of a client's office for a certain amount of hours, certain amount of days, and just walking around and really feeling what's happening there. So that when you get the insights from the survey, you understand why certain elements popped up. Or afterwards, you can go back to the survey data set and say, hey, these are some questions that were triggered just by the mere fact of me walking around. And I think that just gives more depth. So I think it's a combination of broadening the data sets that we're using because we are taking more time to think about what success looks like and how to prove it as well. And on the other side, broadening the tools and things that we use to actually research at our client sites.
That's really fascinating and very insightful. And so what I'd love to know from each of you is a little bit of information about, beyond going for the traditional survey, beyond the focus group, what are the things that you're doing with your clients to really better understand what's happening in the workplace environment and the work environment? And Kim, I'd love to start with you if that's okay on this one.
Now, we recently completed a project with another client where on top of the traditional methods, we actually looked into their communication systems as well. So we did this via Microsoft Viva Insights, and we were able to collect actually quantitative data via hours around how people are communicating with each other, how long are they doing it, and what are some other communication systems that we don't traditionally see, such as instant messaging, etc. With that, what we were able to do was to holistically map out the subjective qualitative experience that you just spoke about with actually what are we seeing behaviorally, what are the actual patterns. Mm-hmm. And that allowed us to be a little bit more intentional, as we talked about earlier, in terms of thinking not just about workplace design, but also workplace planning. So how do we want to make sure that we want to put teams who should be collaborating closer together, nearer to each other within the office areas? So that gave us a little bit more data to understand how the future workplace is going to evolve. And last but not least, where we do see weaker links. So for example, if the HR team is supposed to be the center of influence, but they are actually not very visible within the organization, how can we leverage change management to really help these teams to stand up and to become a little bit more influential over time? So that's a little bit of a case study that we've seen using Microsoft Viva Insights to really help us understand a little bit better on communication patterns.
Kim, thank you so much for sharing that perspective. Herd, I'm curious, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
I think it's just really important to make sure that you take it one step at a time and at the beginning really understand what you're working towards. And have the right people at the table, right? We talked about this earlier on. It's not only a real estate project, anything related to the workplace, it relates to IT, it relates to HR, it relates to the people that are in the environment. And that's such a critical thing. Make sure that at the beginning, everybody is involved and that you can collectively define where you're heading.
Thank you. I think that's a really excellent point in terms of like sharing some guidance on kind of if you can remember one key thing from our conversation. And that's kind of how I'd love to close this out today, is just to sort of share with our audience kind of what is one key thing we'd like to suggest you walk away from and remember, if nothing else, from the dialogue. And I'll kick us off just to give you both a chance to maybe think about all the amazing things you've shared today. But from my perspective, I think it's really important for everyone to remember that, as I said in the beginning, there's a lot of dialogue and a lot of study going on, but there's not consensus yet, right? And so I think it is very important for people to remember that as we do this, there's not one single right answer. There are going to be different types of answers. And as Herta, you mentioned earlier too, there are going to be different things that are appropriate for different organizations, potentially that could change depending upon what location we're looking at. So I think the concept of really thinking about this as a journey that organizations are on, a learning curve that organizations are on, and we should really be focused on learning as much as we can as we move forward, really investing heavily in that change management concept, Kim, that you mentioned in the very beginning, and that these pieces are the really key things to focus on. So remember, there's not a single right answer out there. It's very important for us to ask a lot of questions, to be smart about what those questions are, how we capture the information related to those things, and then how we combine the information to try new things and really see what works best for our organization in our various spots. And I'd love to ask each of you, if you have one final thought you'd like to ask the audience to remember from today. And Kim, I'd love to start with you.
The word of the day is really intentionality. So really investing the time to look inward within your organization on what works for you. And how are you going to use your tools within your organization to enhance internal capabilities to get from point A to point B? So that's not just a transition, but also a more sustainable transformation.
Thank you, Kim. Herta?
For me, the key word is social capital. I think that we've evolved from focusing on the individual to a system where we truly can prove that real estate has impact on your organization. And it's okay to go for both. It's okay to try to make the individual happy with diverse settings, etc. And at the same time, make sure that it is working towards profitability for your organization as well.
Thank you both very much. It's been so fun and exciting to speak with you both today. I've learned a tremendous amount from your insights and perspectives. I look forward to us continuing this dialogue both together and with our clients and with other colleagues here at Griffin & Wakefield. And with that, I'd love to close us out. This has been your team around the table, looking at the topic of hybrid work going from transition to transformation. Thank you very much for your time.